This year, American Rivers, a group dedicated to protecting, restoring, and conserving rivers and clean water, named the Colorado River as the nation's most threatened. Proposed developments at the Grand Canyon in Tucson, where an Italian company has proposed more than 2,100 housing units and 3 million square feet of retail space, as well as hotels, a spa, and conference center, and another on the canyon's east rim that would build a gondola tramway into the canyon, have American Rivers concerned about the environment, wildlife, water usage, and the overall scenic beauty of the national park. Senjin Ellerby is communications director at American Rivers for the Intermountain West. Senjin, I want to ask you first about the classification of the Colorado River as the nation's most endangered. What goes into that classification? How do you guys decide that, and why the Colorado River?
Well, the Most Endangered Rivers report is put out every year, and we've done this since 1984, so this is the 32nd annual report on the, in essence, on the health of our nation's rivers, but it actually means much more than that. The Most Endangered Rivers report, however, is not the most damaged rivers or the most polluted rivers or the most destroyed rivers. It's actually a set of 10 rivers that have a major decision point that the public can influence in the coming year. And so the rivers are classified by American Rivers, by our staff, and we decide based on decision points for each one of those rivers or each one of those stretches of river in the coming 12 months, the significance of the river to people and wildlife, and then the magnitude of the threat to the river and its communities. So the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon this year was listed number one because of the trio of threats to the canyon, all which have major decision points this year. Most people expect that the Grand Canyon would be one of the most protected pieces of real estate in the country, but in fact, it has threats from all sides. First and foremost being the Grand Canyon Escalade project on the East Rim, which is a significant construction project both at the top of the rim as well as near river level, with a gondola tramway project that would shuttle about 10,000 people per day to the bottom of the canyon. And the concern there is multifold. For one thing, it's one of the most sacred sites to about a dozen Native American tribes across the Southwest. It is also very adjacent to endangered species spawning habitat for the humpback chub in the Little Colorado side of the river. And then it's about the experience at the Grand Canyon and what damage would it cause to noise and light and potential pollution, and is this really how the Grand Canyon should be experienced? The second threat is around Tucson. There's a proposal for a pretty dramatic expansion at Tucson, and that would require a lot of water. And it isn't clear what Stilo, the development company that potentially would do this expansion, what their plans are for water. And existing hydrologic studies over the past couple decades have already identified that current groundwater pumping at Tucson is affecting the park. And we are concerned that a further expansion without a significant water management plan and some revelations about exactly how Stilo plans to get the water could really damage the park. And then lastly, the uranium threat. Even though there's a federal moratorium on new uranium claims, there are still a few mines around the park that are outside of that moratorium. And in fact, just a couple weeks ago, one of those mines, the Canyon Mine, was authorized by a federal judge to restart its operations. So, you know, the ring of threats around the canyon is real, and that we're addressing it through public awareness and asking the Interior Department and the Forest Service to engage on these issues and protect the park the way most people expect it to be.
Is it that combination of things that makes the Colorado River most endangered this year? Because obviously over the last, millennia, really, there's been the talk of development at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Well, certainly, yeah, this year is different because for instance, with the Escalade, the project proponents had talked about wanting to start construction in 2016. Uranium, the Canyon mine was working to get authorization to reopen, and now they have done that, and who knows if the other three mines may be closely behind them. And then with regards to Tucson and the groundwater issue there, the Forest Service just last week announced that they would do scoping and be taking comments on the right-of-way issue that Tucson needs to begin the expansion of the town. So those things are all critical decisions that are happening right now and this year, and that's why it was listed number one.
That Tucson development, too, quite interesting because Tucson is such a small little residential community. This development would truly transform this kind of small, quiet town into something completely different. And when you talk about sort of enjoyment of the Grand Canyon, is it your take that that would sort of detract from the enjoyment of the Grand Canyon?
Well, certainly. I think 2013, the census for Tucson was 567 residents, if I have that correct. So even just a back of the napkin, that might be 200 houses, and I don't even think that's true because I think that there's more, like apartment-style residences there now. What Stilo has implied is that there could be up to 2,000 new homes built around the Tucson area, and then 3 million square foot commercial space, lodging, restaurants, et cetera, which is roughly the size of the Mall of America in Minneapolis. We're not necessarily opposed to the development. I mean, there's certainly a need for more, more lodging and more support for the Grand Canyon with nearly 5 million visitors a year. Certainly there's the need. The question is, how do they get the water without impacting the vital resources that are within the park? And we're talking about the seeps and springs and waterfalls and the the aquatic experience within the park, that an increase in groundwater development there could be highly impactful to how the park operates, to some of the ecological zones within the park, as well as the experience, especially with like Havasu Falls, Elves Chasm. Those places are directly connected to the aquifer that Tucson sits on top of, and so we're pretty adamant that there needs to be a very thoughtful, very deliberate plan to analyze those water resources before any wells are plumped in there.
And of course, water use is the biggest concern for all of us here in the Southwest. But as we look at what California is having to do to conserve water, it's something that all of the states in the Southwest have to be concerned about. You've kind of gained some allies recently, and I was really interested to see this press release from the Hispanic Access Foundation about their partnership with you, and what a simple thing it was to get the word out about the Colorado River to through them to churches and other groups by just simply changing a movie and putting it in Spanish. That it seemed like a simple thing, but wow, you reach a lot of people who live in this Colorado River Basin by doing that.
Certainly. That experience and that partnership with the Hispanic Access Foundation has been really great. It was a simple thing. It was a fairly simple idea. That the original film, Pete McBride's film, I Am Red, was originally released in 2013 when we listed the entire Colorado River as the most endangered river for that year. And so we had this asset. We had this beautiful film that had gone around on the film festival circuit that had been seen literally hundreds of thousands of times online. And the idea was, with roughly a third of the nation's Latino population living in the Colorado Basin and quite an impact on our Southwest as well as our national agricultural importance, showing this film to them in these audiences. And we're starting with pastors across the Southwest, church events, but who knows how this might evolve in other ways that we can reach out to the Latino population in the Southwest and across the West. And, certainly California is a great example. We've actually started in California for that purpose because it is, it is a critical drought area now. Everybody should be aware that the drought is severe in California. And that we all have to come together to find solutions on how we're going to address that, and that includes the Hispanic and Latino population. That is certainly, none of this should be addressed without their voice and without them hearing about this and understanding what these issues are. So that was the strategy with it. It's been extremely well received. Thousands of people saw it last weekend through the first round of sermons. There's another set coming up over the next couple of weeks, and then events like a 1,000-person youth event in Coachella, California in mid-June, 1,000 people in July tentatively are scheduled to attend an event in Los Angeles. I mean, this could be a really important and easy way to outreach to that community that benefits the basin, for one thing, but American Rivers and the Hispanic Access Foundation as well. So it's pretty awesome. The reception's been really great.
The interesting thing about that demographic, too, I spoke with Maita Arce, the president and CEO of Hispanic Access Foundation, on Monday, and she talks about how unified the Latino community is about issues about conservation and the environment and protecting and preserving.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I implied, there's many people in the agricultural community and that are living very closely to the Colorado River, both spiritually as well as, you know, tactically, that they're involved with that river all the time. The same filmmaker, Pete McBride, actually made another film recently called Delta Dawn, which touched on the revelation of the river as the pulse flow happened last March, which was releasing some of the water that Mexico had stored in Lake Mead and allowing that to flow down through the delta through Mexico. And in fact, it went all the way to the sea for the first time in more than a decade. So that experience as well, and that was completely based upon, completely beneficial to the Mexican population in that area. And, those people seeing the river flow for the first time in their lives. I mean, kids playing in the river and the rejuvenation that even just that 6-week pulse gave to the delta was pretty amazing. And it really proves the point that rivers can heal themselves, rivers can be healthy, rivers can provide for us if we just give them a chance and keep a little water in them and make it so that these places can survive, and they'll flourish, they'll thrive.
Interestingly, too, we had some honor students from Northern Arizona University head down to the Delta area last weekend. They were repeating a trip that they made last year at this time to follow the pulse flow. They note that the community members down there, too, are the ones who are responsible for keeping a lot of the replanting irrigated, giving up their own water to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, through the course of that film and through the course of that experience, the just adding water, and the pulse flow was timed to when seedlings would come out, to when other wildlife and plant species would be most beneficially able to take advantage of that pulse experience, and the explosion of life that happened while they were down there and while that flow was going on. So it's great to hear that the citizens down there have taken on the cause of keeping that healthy, and now there's negotiations going on to hopefully do another one of these pulse flows maybe 2 or 3 years from now. And if that were able to take place, that would be wonderful. You know, and I think the point of that is, you know, with the drought in California, with the drought, Lake Mead reaching its lowest level, Lake Powell certainly struggling, and Upper Basin not having an amazing snowpack this year. I mean, Colorado had a fairly solid snowpack, but not off the charts by any means. Looking at strategies that municipalities can use less, that agriculture can be a sustainable and efficient, that the Grand Canyon can be protected. All of these things are interwoven, and all of these things can make it so that the river can survive and thrive hopefully all the way through the delta. And that has a direct impact on all of us as residents and all of us as people who eat and all of us as people who recreate in these places. So it's a great symbol of hope that this could all happen.
Yep. Senjin Eberle, Communications Director at American Rivers, thank you so much for talking with us. And I know that we'll be talking to you again because this is an issue that obviously isn't going to go away, either development at the Grand Canyon or concerns over this river.